Surrender is a word that's used in our Bhagavad Gita and other books many, many times. I think you'll find at least 30 or 40 citations in the index to Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, under the word surrender. So I looked up surrender to see what the dictionary said. This is the New International Webster's Third Dictionary. So here's some of the English definitions of surrender. First, to make surrender in law, as in to give up an estate to the holder in remainder or reversion, to relinquish as rights or claims under a patent to the grantor, to deliver the principal unto lawful custody. Another definition of surrender is to yield to the power, control, authority, or possession of another. Give or deliver up possession of upon compulsion or demand. Cease trying to retain or control and agree to yield. And it gives some usages. Surrender the fort. Forced to surrender the ship. The continental firm surrenders the dollars to its own bank at the official exchange rate. Then, some more definitions. To give up completely or agree to forego, especially in favor of another, abandon, resign, or relinquish possession, usually for the sake of another. Assent to loss of possession or exercise of or power or control over, as in surrendered his chair to the lady, benefits bestowed by science which we are not anxious to surrender. Another definition is to give oneself up into the power of another. To abandon or devote as oneself entirely to something without restraint, reservation, or further resistance. The individual has surrendered himself to the ideology. And then the last definition in this dictionary was to give oneself up unto the power of another, to yield, order the troops to surrender. The enemy must soon surrender. So this last definition is maybe a bit nearer to what we think of when we're thinking about surrendering to God. Actually, when you see the devotees with their arms raised like this, Hare Krishna, that's the same sign that the enemy gives when it surrenders, isn't it? Say, raise your hands or put your hands in the back of your head. So this is actually a sign or a symbol of surrender, giving up everything to God, or giving oneself to someone else. That's what surrender means. There's a famous picture we have in our minds from the Mahabharata and the Srimad Bhagavatam of Draupadi, who was in the court of the Kurus, and they were attempting to insult her by defrocking her, denuding her in front of the everyone present. And she was praying like this to Krishna to please save her, as she was helpless. Her saviors couldn't actually save her because they were bound by a certain code. So at one point she just raised her hands and in a gesture of surrender, whatever you want to do to Krishna, it's up to you. And at this point her surrender was complete. She wasn't covering herself or even in this prayer mood or prayer gesture. And at that time, Krishna supplied unlimited cloth so that she could not be made naked in front of the assembly. So that's one of the meanings of surrender, is to give oneself up unto and utterly. So this takes many manifestations. And it's mentioned many times in the Bhagavad Gita. One of the latter instructions is sarvadharmam paradyaja. Everyone knows this verse, mamekam sharanam braja. If you surrender, first Krishna says that you should give up all ideas of religion, which means denominations are ideas of superficial ideas of religion, like names of religions, like Buddhist, Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, all varieties of religion, he says, and surrender unto me. So in other words, surrender is a higher form of worship or a higher form of spiritual existence than adhering to a particular name of a particular faith. But it's the essence of spiritual knowledge is to surrender. And me, Krishna, is the universal Lord, not the Lord of the Hindus or the Muslims or the Christians or the Jews, but there is only one. So that's surrender at the expense of a particular name and style of religious worship, ultimate surrender to the Supreme Being, whatever name he goes by. So that's, and then he says, and if you do this, I will protect you. In another verse, Krishna says, where the word surrender is used, yayatamam prapadyante. Sometimes the word prapadyante is used for surrender, sometimes it's sharanam or sharanagati, sometimes it's sannyas, and other words which mean similar things to surrender. But sometimes these words are all translated by the English word surrender. So in this verse, Krishna says that as you surrender unto me, I'll reward you accordingly. So as we're reading some of the definitions of surrender, they indicate some of them that you give something up, like you surrender to an enemy, for example, or you just surrender everything you have, but you don't get anything in return. If you're surrendering to the enemy, you become a prisoner. And in general, when we think of surrender, we think of just giving something up without getting anything in return. But in surrendering to God, which is a different type of surrender, there's always reciprocation. And the reciprocation is always perfect, just as there's the physical law of action and reaction. You put a certain object of a certain weight in water and it displaces water equal to the weight of that object. That's a law that doesn't change in the physical world. So Krishna's explanation of yayatamam prapadyante, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So he, and then he says, everyone who surrenders unto me, everyone follows my path in all respects. So the idea is that there is perfect reciprocation. Surrender to Krishna or the Supreme always has a return. In our daily activities, we are looking for a return for any amount, any energy that we expend, any money. A good businessman is measured by how well he gets a return on his investment. If he makes investments that get returns regularly and equal to or greater than his investment, then he's considered to be very expert. Especially the greater the return, the greater he is considered to be. So in spiritual life, this happens automatically. It's actually guaranteed by Krishna. And the reciprocation is because it's guaranteed, it's different. In the material world, we give or we surrender, and we may get no return. We may get some, we may get a lot, we may get a little, or we may get none. That's the nature of the material world. So surrender to God has a transcendental aspect. It's a transcendental surrender, and it's different from surrender as we know it in the material world because it's a guaranteed return. That's the difference between surrender to God and surrender to one who is not God or not of God or not godly. In another verse, Krishna says, Daivihi yesha gunamai, this is also in the Bhagavad Gita, mama maya dirataya. Mameva ye prapadyante mayametan tarantite. The word prapadyante is used again, prapadyate. And here Krishna is saying that Daivihi yesha gunamai, that my external energy, Daivihi yesha gunamai, mama maya, my maya, or my external illusory energy, is duratyaya. Duratyaya means impossible to overcome. It's very durable and insurmountable is the translation that Prabhupada uses. To survive spiritually, That is to overcome birth, death, disease, and old age, which is actually impossible to do. One has to be born, die, suffer old age and disease. That actually can be overcome, all those things. And that's a distinct contribution of practicing Sanatana Dharma or Krishna consciousness. The inevitable things of life, like birth and death, and the ultimate problems of life, which are those things, can actually be overcome. And Krishna says explicitly that these can be overcome by the process of surrender. And there's actually no other means to do it. So, in fact, he says, by surrendering, one can easily overcome that which is insurmountable. So it becomes not only possible, but it becomes easy. So it's a mystical process. And it's a simple process. It's very difficult. Millions and billions are spent every year just to try to overcome disease. And the same is being spent to stop birth and stop death. They're trying to give medicines and other means for people to live indefinitely in this body. But it's very complicated and very difficult. And so far it's not actually happening very successfully. But by surrendering to Krishna, it's possible to overcome all these things immediately. That's Krishna's assurance. That's Krishna's guarantee. So what does it mean, surrender? What does surrender actually mean? What are we giving up? When we say, I'm giving myself, or I'm giving my all my possessions, what does that actually mean? So here's another verse in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, the 5th verse. Krishna says, those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain that eternal kingdom. So I'll read a little of Srila Prabhupada's purport. The surrendering process is described here very nicely. The first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride. Because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself the lord of material nature, it is very difficult for him to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should know that by cultivation of real knowledge that he is not the lord of material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord. So this is the first knowledge about surrendering, to know who is actually the proprietor of the universe. We're all bewildered into thinking at one time or another, if not all the time, that I am the master of my universe and maybe even the whole universe. Prabhupada is famous for saying, this is the whole problem. That's a very well-known quote. This is the whole problem. We think that we're the master of all we survey. One should know by the cultivation of real knowledge that he is not the lord of material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Lord. When one is free from delusion caused by pride, he can begin the process of surrender. So this is like a prerequisite to surrender. For one who is always expecting some honor in this material world, it is not possible to surrender to the Supreme Person. Pride is due to illusion. For although one comes here, stays for a brief time, and then goes away, he has the foolish notion that he is the Lord of the world. He thus makes all things complicated and is always in trouble. The whole world moves under this impression. People are considering the land, this earth, to belong to human society, and they have divided the land under false impressions that they are the proprietors. So we can also see from this form of delusion that the earth is being exploited. All the animals and plants we tend to look upon as objects for our exploitation and to mercilessly destroy them. And therefore our whole environment is very deeply polluted due to this idea that man has supreme dominion. Humanity has supreme dominion over all other living creatures. That's another form of his pride. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of this world. When one is freed from such a false notion, he becomes free from all the false associations caused by familial, social, and national affections. These faulty associations bind one to this material world. After this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. So the first stage is to understand that we are not the lords and masters, and this is possible by first understanding that we're not actually these material bodies. We then won't identify as being Christian, Muslim, Hindu, or the proprietor of all the other living beings in the water, in the sea, in the air, in the earth, and other human beings. So after this stage, Prabhupada writes, after this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what is actually not his own. So the beginning of the Isha-Upanishad also explains this, the first verse, that everything actually, Ishivashamidam Sarvam, is owned and controlled by the Lord. And everyone has a quota. But what happens is when we try to possess more than we really deserve or than we really need, then the whole balance is upset due to this idea of this false idea of I own everything, what is actually mine and what is not mine. And when one has an understanding of things as they are, he becomes free from all dual conceptions such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain, becomes full in knowledge, then it is possible to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a prerequisite. Surrender means humility first. Lord Chaitanya in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita mentions there are six symptoms of surrender. In particular, they are mentioned. And these go along with devotional service. Surrender, one of the meanings of surrender to God is to carry out the order or the will or act under the laws of God. The laws of nature, the higher order laws of the universe, they are all actually enacted by the Supreme Person. And the difference between being atheistic and theistic or religious and irreligious is the extent to which one recognizes these laws of God and follows them. So, according to the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, the first symptom of surrender is to accept everything which is favorable for propagating devotional service to the Lord. By devotional service, we mean obeying or acting under or within the laws that are given by the Supreme Being. The Vedic scriptures are the ultimate laws governing material nature. Sometimes Prabhupada compared these to an instruction manual to an electronic instrument. We live in a world, but the Vedic literatures are the instructions by which we can actually live and operate within this world, knowing exactly what we own, what we don't own, and how everything works. So one has to first know what to accept, what is mine, what is not mine in the material world, and see how everything which is suitable can actually be used to further the mission of the Lord. Actually, the Lord has a mission. God has a mission. We're not simply here to exploit others or to study. I mean, of course, Krishna recommends that, but the Lord has a mission. He wants to reclaim all living beings back to the spiritual world so that they become completely purified and develop loving devotional service. So to accept everything favorable in that service is the first symptom. Then to reject everything unfavorable. There are many things which interfere with devotional service, such as intoxication or gambling, meat eating, illicit sex, and many other types of unnecessary activities. One has to know where to draw the line and what is actually acceptable and what is not acceptable. So to reject everything that will inhibit the flow of devotional service is another symptom of surrender. One should always understand that Krishna, or the Supreme Lord, is always looking out for all living entities and protecting them. And without that protection, no one can be protected from death, old age, disease, or anything else. There's a Hindi saying, Rakhi Krishna Marike, Marike Krishna Rakike. If Krishna wants to protect you, no one can harm you, no one can kill you. And if Krishna wants you to die, no one can save you. So one should always feel that ultimately one is under the protection of Krishna. Then one should try to be in line with Krishna's desires, to aid Krishna's mission. And that means in the process of surrendering that a person has no other desire other than what Krishna's desire is. So a transcendentalist becomes expert in knowing the mind of the Lord through the spiritual master, through great saintly persons, through the Vedic scriptures, and through penance and austerities and other practices of devotional service, worshiping the deity, associating with devotees, and gradually comes to know the mind of the Lord. And when a devotee or an aspiring transcendentalist has no other desire than the desires of the Lord, he's obviously surrendering because he's has no separate desire from the Lord. His desire is the same as the Lord's desire. So that's a real obvious sign of surrender. The fifth symptom is that he always feels dependent on Krishna. Just as we know the whole earth, all life on earth is dependent on the sun. If the sun were to be extinguished, everything would die. So one who is in the process of surrendering knows that he also is completely dependent on the energy, the mercy of Krishna. And we learn that the sun itself, its energy is completely dependent on the energy of Krishna, because Krishna is the source of all energy, the cause of all causes. Therefore, it's in our best interest to understand that we have to depend on Krishna ultimately for whatever may happen, because he's actually the supreme controller. Ishwara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha, and the cause of all causes. Anadi Radi Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. This is Lord Brahma's prayer, famous prayer. Actually, it was the first Sanskrit verse that Srila Prabhupada taught his disciples in New York when he first came from India. Krishna is the supreme controller. He is full of knowledge, bliss, and eternity. Ishwara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Nadi Radi Govinda. He is the supreme, pleasure-giving potency to all living beings, and he is the cause of all causes. So therefore, one should always feel completely dependent on Krishna. Another aspect of this is that Krishna is always supremely independent. Krishna owes no obligation to anyone except by his will, but he's not bound by any law. This is one of the things that makes God's position unique. So when we say surrender to God, we're surrendering to the person who is supremely independent, who's never answerable to anyone else. So our dependence on him also requires our understanding of his supremely swarat, our independent position. And lastly, one must be always continue to carry oneself as meek and humble. Just as in the beginning, one has to develop a humility by knowing that one doesn't own the earth or have the right to exploit others. So one has to always maintain his position, because even though one has that understanding and begins to progress along the path of surrender, rejecting the unfavorable, accepting the favorable, feeling dependent on Krishna's mercy, if one becomes proud again, then all of these steps can become destroyed and the process of surrender can be reversed and can be lost. So this is also emphasized, that one should always be not just carry oneself, but actually develop a true humility and meekness. So these are some of the, it's a big subject in one sense, the whole process of becoming a transcendentalist and understanding Bhagavad Gita is based on surrendering to God, knowing what it means to do so. That may take many lifetimes to actually understand, so try to touch on a few of the main points of surrender in a short class. Are there any questions or points you'd like to add? Yes. To develop love for God means to know what God's mission is, and to know God in detail, in order to love anyone. It's not possible to love someone unless we know the person's feature, nature, qualities, activities. Then there's something to love. So we have to know what God looks like, what he does, where he lives, what his desires are, what gives him pleasure. And then that love can actually take place through what we call devotional service. As we engage in that service, through knowledge of who Krishna is, what he does, and then what the procedures are to begin that service, the standard procedures, then love will begin to actually develop in the heart. And when love develops in the heart, then we actually begin the process of surrender simultaneously. And when that surrender comes and love of Godhead comes, then, as Krishna says, we automatically break out of the wheel of samsara. No. The main thing is to develop our love, and that can be done no matter what you look like or how you dress. If you follow these symptoms of surrender, if you can actually surrender to Krishna at the time of death, it's also said in the Bhagavad Gita, whatever we're thinking about at the time of death, that determines our future existence. And he also says that if one is thinking of me at the time of death, he will attain me. Whatever we think of at the time of death, that is ultimately our future. Whether we have separately developed a yogic system of chakras or not, if we practice bhakti yoga in this way, we will automatically develop the same power as having gradually lifted our life air through the chakra system. We'll get the same effect. This is part of Lord Chaitanya's teaching. Thank you. Hare Krishna.